This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me once again, as he is every week, but this week in particular was one he would certainly not miss. It's my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, you know, it's been a little over a year since we started doing The Orb, and we talked about most of the characters up front at the start of the show, but not all of them. And finally, the big event you've been waiting for years here, we're going to talk about Ezri Dax tonight.
Chris, definitely, I think I've probably been waiting for this my whole life, or at least since, I guess, 1998, when we were introduced to Ezri Dax, the love of my life. I've always liked this character. I don't know what it was about her, and so obviously I'll be really biased in the whole conversation tonight. I love Nicole DeBoer, who played her, the way that she played the character. Our own Charlene Schmidt got me a signed picture of Ezri from Nicole when she met her. And so, it's really, really cool. I do hope to meet her one day. You know, she hasn't been to a Dallas convention recently, so, but when she does, I'll go meet her. This year I'm meeting the other love of my life at the Sci-Fi Expo here in just a week. I'm going to be meeting one of my favorite companion from Doctor Who, Amy Pond or Karen Gillan, which I'm super excited about. I cannot wait. The moment Nicole comes, I'm there. I'm getting my picture taken. I'm proposing. I'm just probably married, so it's weird.
We'll do our Amy Pond show on our other show, our Doctor Who show, The TARDIS.
Oh, yeah.
Where we gaze into the TARDIS.
Yes, yeah. Well, you know, gazing into the heart of the TARDIS, if you've watched Doctor Who, you know, bad things happen. Rose almost died because of that, and it caused the Ninth Doctor to have to regenerate. So I would not suggest gazing into the heart of the TARDIS unless you're a Time Lord. So, which I am, so it's, I'm all
right. Well, right. I mean, that's the secret. That's why we
do exactly.
It, so. All right. Well, let's jump into this conversation here. I'm really interested to hear your thoughts because for me, first topic is new Dax or no Dax. And when Terry Farrell didn't want to continue on the show and they had to kill off Jadzia Dax, that raised the big question, right? Like, what do you do? Do you try to continue the character? Do you simply not have the character anymore in the final season of the show? And you've watched these TV shows where an actor didn't want to come back and they try to continue the same character, but they do it with a different actor. And I think that rarely ever works. Dax was a unique situation, though, because we knew that, well, there's a host and there's a symbiont, and the symbiont is Dax. The host was Jadzia. So, you know, we could bring back Dax. It makes sense in universe, but will the fans warm up to the idea of a new character who's Dax in the seventh season of a show, the final season of a show? Is it worth doing? And I don't know. I was really, really lukewarm on it the first time through the series in first run. How did you feel about it the very first time?
You know, it's tough. One, you know, I know that the creators, they realize, look, if we're going to bring any, you know, a character in, one, we know that it has to be another woman. We can't have Nana Visitor be the only woman we have on the show as a main right. character. So if you're going to bring a Dax in, you know it has to be a woman. It's a really interesting situation. And what you want to do, and it limits your options. But to me, I really do think they had what you said, a ready-made reason to be able to bring this character back. It's not like you're bringing it back to life. You're not doing, you know, any of that kind of crazy stuff you might see in like a comic book or something.
Right.
Where we're just going to bring the character back to life, but it's going to be different. They also had a great opportunity to really explore what it meant to be a non-joined Trill who gets joined,
yeah.
which,
that's the thing. Yeah.
Which because they did all these things, I think it made it a lot more interesting than just kind of, we're going to dump somebody on there. We're going to make them just like Jandia. And so yeah. we can pretend like she wasn't even gone. No, they made it all uncomfortable. You know, they made it more realistic. Yeah, this new person gets dumped into everybody's lap, and not most of the characters on the show aren't really even happy about it. The only one who's happy about it is Quark, and then of course Sisko is able to accept her right away.
Garak is certainly not happy about it. I mean, Garak you don't even know who you are. You leave me alone.
Right, and you know, I think in some ways. You probably have Bashir, who's a little bit happy at the idea of maybe knowing a different Dax. At least he's more open to it. Yeah. But then, of course, you have Worf, who's really opposed to it at the beginning as well. But that also created some interesting tension. So all in all, I think they were able to really create a well-thought-out reason for bringing the Dax symbiont back. But giving us a whole new experience of what it meant to be a Trill, going to give us a background into their race in a way we'd never seen before. You know, whether people like the Prodigal Daughter episode, you really do get to see kind of inside a Trill family of nobody who's joined, just what it's like to be one of them. So,
did you feel this way the first time through, or is it something that you've come to feel after watching the show many times and really digging into the character?
I think that I felt this way kind of the first time, and mainly I think it was the betrayal by Nicole that kind of won me over. The way that she played the character won me over. I wasn't so much focused on who the character was going to be. The way that the person was playing it drew me in. And the fact that, you know, you went from having a Dax who's really became a very confident character. You know, she kind of started off a little shaky, but by the end, she's confident, she's funny, she's sassy, you know, she's all of these things. You bring on Ezri, and she's a mess. She's kind of schizophrenic. She has no idea who she is. She has no idea what she even likes in life, which, I mean, gosh, who couldn't really identify with? You know, so it's basically she's kind of like a teenager almost. I was a teenager at the time, and you know, you're trying to figure all that stuff out. And yeah, she was really cute too. That really helped.
Ezri in a cocktail dress.
Exactly. Ezri in a cocktail
named
dress.
Named our Bada Bing Bada Bang episode. But yeah, see, I had a different reaction. I've come to appreciate the character a lot more over time as I've gotten older, as I've watched the episodes for more of the character interaction and what they're doing with each character and how each character affects the other, as we'll talk about a bit later, especially Ezri and Worf, for example. The first time through, I think I took it much more on a superficial level, and I was so attached to the character of Jadzia Dax, and the way they handled the death of Jadzia was, especially at the time, I felt was really lame. And then there's going to be a new Dax the next season, and I kind of felt like, I guess, if you're going to kill Jadzia Dax, then that should be the end of the character. Even though, of course, as I said, it does make sense in-universe that there could be another. And then I never warmed up to Nicole DeBoer personally. I didn't really. Now when I look at it and everything you say, I do agree. The way she portrays the character and the way the character's written, it works. I think she does a good job with it. But at the time, first time through, I didn't really warm up to it. And it's only in recent years, as I've rewatched DS9 over and over, that I've come to accept the change in the character. And not only accept it, but actually I think that it was a good move. And I might go out on a limb here, and I know a lot of listeners will not agree with me on this. I almost think that if they could have planned it, maybe it was a good idea to kill Jadzia Dax, bring Ezri Dax on, because it allowed them to tell stories about a Trill, and like you said, about an unjoined Trill, also about a newly joined Trill that they couldn't tell otherwise. They couldn't tell these stories if they only had Jadzia. And I think that because Jadzia was such a strong character and such a confident woman and a confident Trill, that we sort of get the impression that all joined Trills are like Jadzia Dax, whereas actually it's not necessarily the case. And of course, we got to see some glimpses of, you know, past Dax hosts and, you know, that they had their problems. But we didn't have a character, we didn't have a Trill on a week-by-week basis who we could watch struggle with what it meant to be joined. And so now I think from a writing standpoint, it was a really good move.
Well, and we'll talk about a little bit later as well, because I completely agree with you, Chris, is that she has some moments with some of the different characters that she couldn't have had as Jadzia, and it's because of who Ezri is as a character that she's able to speak into some lives and actually help create some huge changes for the Star Trek universe through some of these characters. And so what is amazing to me in watching through kind of the last season again and watching through some of those last episodes again is how well they start to use her character by the end of the season and really plugging her in and helping her kind of not just move the story along, but they're moving her character along as well. So they're doing it all in concert. Like her character is influencing the story. It's not that the story is influencing the character, which is the way it should always be. Like character should always come first. And they're taking the kind of the lemons that they got that Terry wanted to leave and making something really interesting, I think really good out of it. And like you said, doing things you couldn't do if Jadzia had just been there. And kind of creating a little bit more dynamic of story. And it's crazy to me to think that a show that really excelled at characters and even side characters, you know, I do feel like I know Ezri as well as I know a Quark, I think, by the end of season 7, which is pretty amazing to bring on a character, you know, in one season. I know, you know, Deep Space Nine has a lot of episodes comparatively to some of the shows we get now, but, you know, still, I feel like I know that character really well, even after only one season. You know, they spend a lot of time on her, as they should, because they're introducing a new character, but two, I think it ends up paying off story-wise by the end, so.
Yeah, I think that's one complaint that a lot of fans have is that they spend too much time. It's like on Voyager with Seven of Nine too, when she was introduced, and it's like seven story. And a lot of DS9 fans, I believe, I hear this anyway, that they feel that there's too much focus on Ezri at times in season 7. And I agree when you bring a new character on that you do need to focus on that character. The problem is that it's happening in the final season of a series, the 7th season, and it's happening in the middle of a story that's been building and building for a couple of seasons, and it feels sometimes like maybe too much time is going into this new character that was introduced because an actress didn't want to continue on the show.
Right.
Well, but like you said, I mean, she does influence the story, and she helps other characters grow and helps them get through the events that have been building up in a way that you really wouldn't expect a new character to do on a show.
Well, and a part of it, I think, is because she gives them something else to focus on. You know, she gives them that kind of new energy to be able to have, and if they have a new person to get to know in the midst of all this, and they start to really, I think, enjoy that, which is really cool. And then I think the other thing that is really interesting to watch about the way that the character kind of develops is that I don't ever feel like she's really taking away from the other characters on the story. Because even some of her big episodes, like, say, Prodigal Daughter, a big character in that episode is Miles. You know, and it's right. Building off an episode we'd already seen with Miles of his. So, I mean, even when they're, you know, doing an episode that's Ezri centric, there's a lot going on with other characters. And I still feel like, I'm watching through the end of the show, and I can't think of a show for me that ever has ended better, that I felt more completed by watching it. And I feel resolution with all the characters I get. I feel like I could keep knowing them, and I want to keep knowing them, but I'm also satisfied. I'm satiated with what I got. And so,
right.
That says a lot. And even for coming with a new character like Ezri, like, I got enough of her in that one season. And if there had never been books or anything like that, And it just left that her and, you know, Julian were together on Deep Space Nine, I would have been happy.
Right. Well, let's talk about, okay, so Ezri Teagan is who she was before she was joined. And then she comes onto the station and she's a counselor. So she's introduced to the show as the counselor. And of course, the first thing you're thinking is, okay, Counselor Troy, the Enterprise had a counselor. Well, now the station's going to have a counselor. And again, it does make sense that, you know, any Starfleet installation or ship would have a counselor. I would think they'd have multiple counselors, actually. But she comes on as that purpose. And I know my first reaction was like, oh, she's going to be the counselor on the station. But then it turns out that it's kind of ironic, right? She's a counselor. She's a complete mess. She can't help anybody. And so you have to assume that she was a little bit more grounded. She's young, but she was a little bit more grounded before being joined. But boy, this unplanned joining has just thrown her for a loop. What did you think about the idea of Ezri as the station's new counselor?
You know, I think it's funny. You know, you got a counselor who's a hot mess. You know, especially, you know, it really plays out with the episode with Garrick and her trying to figure out who she is. But what's great about it is they don't play it TNG wise. You know, they don't give you that kind of like late 80s, early 90s therapeutic thing. Like she really gets to kind of grow through her experience of helping others. And it helps teach her about herself, which is, you know, so much of what happens in real life. And she's kind of growing into her own and becoming more confident as she kind of figures out who she is. And her ability to counsel kind of comes as much from her own growth as it does from, you know, all the lifetimes of experience that she has as well. It's funny. I kind of groan at the beginning, like, oh, she's going to be the counselor. But I feel like they really learned from the kind of that Counselor Troy. They don't play her like that at all. She comes off as the kind of counselor you would actually go see in real life, you know, and somebody who's, you know, they're not perfect, and they're going to tell you stories in the session of their weird and wacky life and try and help you figure out things just as they're trying to figure out things.
Well, plus from a character creation standpoint, if you're going to bring a character on the show and you're going to make them someone who is going to be struggling with their identity, trying to figure out who they are, at least in DS9 style, what better job to give them than counselor?
Right, exactly. And like you said, it is the great irony of the character, you know, immediately you have somebody who's schizophrenic who's trying to help people get better themselves. And so, but it does, it really fits kind of that Deep Space Nine mold of this idea that, you know, we're really not perfect characters. We're not perfect people. We're never going to be perfect. We're all striving to get better and be better people, and live up to the utopian ideals, especially in Star Trek, that they have. But nobody's actually going to do that. So they give us kind of a real life example of that in Ezri. And yeah, she also gets to mirror the idea of especially I think now, that kind of adult, that young adult kind of phase that so many kids are going through, that delayed adolescence that they have with the later and later, you know, the college years, trying to figure all that out. You know, but to me, she really seems like that character, you know, that boy or girl now who's gotten out of college, is living at home again and not really sure what they want to do with their life because nothing's turning out the way they thought it was going to.
Yeah.
That's what she reminds me of, which is funny because her character is actually more relevant now than it was then.
Well, there's so much about Deep Space Nine that's even more relevant now than it was then, right? While we're on the counselor topic, because we're not going to talk about this as an actual relationship topic, but you mentioned Garak and Ezri when she was counseling him and he was dealing with his claustrophobia. And we talk about side characters, and Ezri to me, even though she is main cast, she is Dax, she feels more like one of the many, many side characters on DS9 just because we only had her for one season. You know, the number of episodes that she is in is comparable to the other characters. And but what better pairing than Garak to bring out the fact that she has all these problems of her own. And because Garak himself, I mean, it's not schizophrenia, but you know, you never quite know who Garak is. Just like Ezri never, when she comes on, she's not sure who she is. Garak's is sort of intentionally fabricated, right? You know, he's told so many lies that he's created this multiple identity for himself, but and he hides problems the way that she would try to hide things that are concerning her. But what did you think about the conversations between Garak and Ezri?
I think it's really well done. I think that was a great episode to have really her shine in, and kind of put her on the road to healing in the same way she's trying to put Garak on the road to healing. And, you know, Garak uses his ability to read people as a weapon, and he uses that against Ezri. And yet, you know, Ezri is taken aback by it, but she's not destroyed by it, which a lot of people are by Garak. And so that kind of shows her strength of character. And so that was a really great way to let you know that this character was going to be okay in the end. It was just going to take her a while to kind of figure things out. And that was going to be an interesting journey. And it was a journey that so many of us have to take, and it's very relatable. And so I really liked that they kind of made the big first Ezri episode, an episode that dove into who she was struggling to be, as well as also giving us a great insight into a character we already loved, which was Garak. And, you know, love great Garak-centric episodes. So pairing those two together, somebody you really want to know more about and somebody you're just trying to figure out, it was a really good episode.
Every time we see Garak, we find out something new about him.
Yes.
There are things on the screen. Like, I know about one of my favorite episodes, and we're going to be doing this on the Ready Room, is The Wire from season 2 with Garak. But when that episode came out, a lot of fans complained about it because they said they didn't learn anything about Garak in that episode. Like, were you watching? Were you listening? It's like every time Garak's on the screen, we learn something fascinating about this character. So, all right. Well, that was a good one. Well, let's talk about some of the key relationships, though. And let's start with Sisko, Ezri and Sisko, because of the Sisko-Dax connection, because of Curzon, and then the way that Jadzia and Sisko always played their dynamic together as Sisko, even though Jadzia was younger and was a subordinate, Sisko always viewed her as a mentor. I mean, when they talked to each other, it was more like they were equals. And you could tell that Sisko really valued the experience of Dax as a mentor to him. How did you see that carrying through with Ezri? Because she wasn't the strong person that Jadzia was in the beginning.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think the role gets to be reversed. You know, for the first time that Sisko knows a Dax, he's the one kind of in the mentoring role in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. and she's in the learning role. Yet at the same time, there are moments when that gets flipped back around because there's the beauty of the fact that she's had so many lifetimes and she can kind of reach inside and pull out this wisdom that isn't necessarily hers, but it comes from a part of her. And it does make her older, even though she's, you know, very young. And so I thought that was a great twist of watching them kind of do that, of him getting to be the mentor this time and mm-hmm. her getting to be the learner. That ability to then just kind of twist it on its head and it be kind of back to where it was before and then go back to her being younger. It was great. I really enjoyed that. And I loved too that, for Sisko, because of his relationship with Jadzia, at this point, he'll always be friends with a Dax if he can. I think he would always want to know a Dax.
Everyone wants to know a Dax, Matthew.
Well, yeah. we're just gonna, you know, she needs a bar called Dax's, and because everybody wants to go to Dax's. It's kind of like Cheers. Everybody knows your name there. It's a lot of fun.
Where everyone knows your name and your last seven names as well.
Exactly. I think
Sisko was cool. A real anchor to her as well. Yes. Saying, because the one that stands out is when she decides that she's going to, well, first she's going to resign from Starfleet. Then she decides, well, she'll go back to the Destiny. But she comes into Sisko's office to tell him not to, you know, she's changed her mind and not to send that paper to Starfleet. I guess it's not a paper, right? A transmission in the 24th century. But he tells her, like, I can't do that because I never sent it in the first place, because he knows Dax better mm-hmm. than Ezri knows Dax.
Right. And that's one of those neat things where he gets to help kind of start to ground her, because, you know, and start to give her a place to build a foundation from. Because like you said, he knows her, she doesn't. But he kind of can see inside of her what she's going to be able to become, because he watched the same transformation really happen in Jadzia. Jadzia came on the station, she was confident, but she wasn't who she was by the end, you know.
Right.
She had gone through a lot with her initiation. It had been tough on her, and she was still trying to figure things out as we went through those very first seasons, as the writers were trying to figure her out. And what's interesting is now they get to do it again. I think they have a much better kind of thought process through of how they're going to go through with this Dax.
Right. Because this time the Dax character has been settled. They're not trying to figure out who the Dax character is anymore. So that's stable underneath, and then you just put a new host on top of it.
Yeah.
Well, the big relationship, of course, is the one with Worf. And this one, I want to hear your thoughts on, because of the way that you generally analyze these situations and these characters. And we've talked before about, on both sides of the Jadzia Worf relationship, about how each of those characters helped make the other one who they were, and how I think Jadzia and Worf, you know, again, going back to TNG, everyone was like, Troy and Worf, what the hell was that? What were you thinking, right? But then he comes to station and you're like, Worf, Jadzia, this feels right. Like they're really, these characters are made for each other. And Jadzia really changed Worf a lot as a person. And then she's ripped away. And it's such... First of all, we see Worf as this warrior having to deal with something that you know, we all have to deal with at some point in our lives where we lose a loved one. And how does he deal with it? But he has to try to maintain that he's a Klingon, he's a warrior on the outside. And now, not only is Jadzia gone, now he's face to face with part of her again in this new character who is also a woman. And I think that we saw as much character growth as we saw in Worf from the time he joined the show up to the death of Jadzia. We see a lot of change in Worf in season 7, and so much of it is due to Ezri.
Yeah, you know, especially I think in the last 10 episodes, yeah. They really have to deal with that. You know, they go, she goes on the mission to save him, even though she's not supposed to. They get captured. They have to go through that whole experience of, you know, they sleep together, and then he's remorseful because he's realized that he's really not in love with her. And honestly, it wasn't really an honorable thing for him to do to try and create a relationship with somebody he knows isn't really her, and he's not really going to love the same way and all that. And but what's great is that out of that, they're able to pull this kind of deep friendship because they do know each other really well. There's a part of Worf that knows her in a way that nobody else will. And there's a part of her that really knows him in a way that, they never, you know, nobody else ever will. And so what I thought was great though, is when you get Attacking the Wind, you get this great conversation that they have because Worf is really frustrated with Gowron and what's going on. And he knows that it's got to change. And in fact, even Sisko has challenged him. You've got to change this. This cannot stay this way. You do whatever it takes, basically. Another one of those great Sisko moments of he's going to do whatever it takes, and he's going to allow his crew to kind of maybe bend rules that, you know, because he knows what it's needed. And they have this great conversation, her and Worf, where she says, look, I don't have this kind of romanticism that Curzon and Jadzia did about the Empire. I look at it basically a lot more cynically. And I see a you know, this society that's built on a lot of corruption. You say you're honorable, you say you're warriors, and yet you're willing to live this life of a lie because of your corrupt leaders. And then she says to him this great statement, you are the most honorable, greatest man that I know. If you're willing to accept this kind of corruption, like, well, what chance does the rest of the Empire have? And that really drives the heart of Worf. And that's something that Jadzia would never be able to say to him. Because like Curzon, she's too much in love with Klingon life and Klingon culture. And so they really use this ability of having Ezri be a different character, be completely different in her feelings towards the Empire, and motivate Worf to do something that needs to be done, which is somebody has to challenge Gowron. And it also creates that great scene where, you know, for a second you think Worf's going to rule the Empire, and no, he passes it on to the guy who doesn't want the power, to Martok, which is great because we all love Martok. But it all happens because of the conversation between him and Ezri, and that depth of trust that they have is great. And it's funny because Worf kind of has this thing where he keeps making fun of Julian because she knows, he knows that she loves Julian, and he's making fun of the fact that he's playing with models and stuff, and she's trying to defend him. And then of course there's that great scene too where Worf starts talking about how they'll never defend it, and she's like, do you want to go join them? And he kind of gives her that look like, yes, but I'm not going to admit it to you.
Right. He's really into it.
They really create this great relationship. And it, like you said, it really does help these two characters move forward and grow. And it gives Worf, I think, a beautiful end. You know, this idea that Worf is able to let go. He's able to let go of Starfleet even by the end of the show and become an ambassador for the Klingon people to the Federation. Really, I think because of his relationship with Ezri, that really is the impetus for that, because, you know, he wouldn't have been asked to be an ambassador if it weren't for Martok. And so I think that's really cool. It's really, it's a really neat way to take what you've been given and create some great story out of it because you're following the character stories. And that's with Worf and Ezri, it brings them to an even better place. And so,
yeah, well, sometimes you need that person who knows you well enough to really give you guidance, but you know well enough that you can trust them and you will listen to them as well, that they're not just the outside voice. But that person needs to be able to see things from a new perspective as well. And so that is the unique twist, right, of the Trill, Jadzia, Ezri, and Worf. Well, the other big relationship for Ezri is the one that the series ends with, and that is the one with Bashir, the one that Worf is making fun of. And, of course, we know from the very beginning of the series that Bashir was chasing after Jadzia. You know, he, especially early on, he really wanted Jadzia. I think he kind of got over it. At least he acted like he got over it a bit as the show went on. But now there's a new Dax in town, and he, you know, starts a relationship with her. And it was, I don't know, it was interesting to see it come together. It's like two people. It's like as sure as Bashir is of himself as a genetically enhanced human, when it comes to women, you know, all that confidence goes out the window.
Well, and it's really funny. You know, at the beginning of the show, he's so raw as a character. I think Jadzia's kind of loving acceptance of that rawness and wanting to kind of allow him to, and it kind of pushes him forward. You know, she kind of motivates him in a lot of ways to become a better man, because she won't say yes. But as he kind of becomes a more mature guy, you know, it's that kind of heartbreaking thing when she learns in the, or he learns in the end from Ezri, you know, if it hadn't been for Worf, it would have been you.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a hard thing to hear, but she helped make him that. And so, you know, there's this, I think what's interesting is that it's flipped. You know, Julian then gets to be that for her. And by the time this series ends, she's much more comfortable in her own skin. And they're much more on equal footing. I mean, she's still kind of in need of him a little bit, and he's still kind of in need of her a little bit, but in a good way. They're going to help each other grow and become better people. And, you know, that's part of being in a relationship. And so I thought it was wonderful that to end the show with, you know, him getting the girl, but just in a different way, you know, like the girl that's really right for him. You know, Jadzia wasn't really ever going to be right for him. She was right for Worf. But Ezri really is kind of perfect for Bashir, I think.
Would you call it getting the worm, but in a different girl?
Oh, God. Yeah, I guess you could call it that. But wow, that's a whole different subject.
So you thought the pairing was a good pairing between the two of them. I'm trying to think back to what I thought about it the first time it was on, and it was sort of, yeah, I think in the end, yeah, what they had gone through, it was an appropriate pairing. DS9 did a good job of pairing people up with appropriate characters.
And it was slow too, you know. I think they did a great job of her having to kind of put to rest the Worf thing and realizing that her feelings that Jadzia had for Julian, and then the kind of the way that Julian had accepted her and just was friends with her immediately and kind of was there for her, that won her over, and those things combined created something that was really true, you know. And you know, what was great about him is that he didn't chase her immediately, you know, like he would have Jadzia. He didn't do any of that. He allowed her to kind of come to him, you know, and to figure it out. And he kind of slowly figured it out. And he wasn't over the top and ridiculous about it like he had been with her. He was much more confident in the end. He really, it, it was hard for him, you know, like he's willing to let her be with Worf when she comes into the infirmary and she's like trying to tell him what had happened and that she really is in love with him. And he thinks she's going to be telling him, oh no, I chose Worf, you know, we're back together. And, you know, but he's just a good man, you know, at that point. And, yeah. And I think she really realizes who this guy is and it just great for a great pairing, I think.
Well, that's where he is the more mature character mm-hmm. at this point. Whereas at the beginning, Jadzia was the more mature character of the two. So like you said earlier, it gets flipped around, which is a very
interesting
twist.
Well, and that creates, and that's kind of, you know, a lot of times and in a lot of ways, you know, in a lot of relationships, the guy will be older than the girl and it kind of has that pairing, you know. Otherwise, it's kind of a mom relationship, which is a little weird.
Well, so, I would say that the guy tends to be older than the girl, but not necessarily more mature.
That's true. That's true.
Right.
Depends on the guy.
That's right. All right. Well, let's wrap this up with one other thing. Now, as many people listening to the show know, you and I do another show together called Literary Treks. We talk about what goes on in the books, you know, beyond the television series. And Ezri is a character who, because we only got to see her in one season at the end of DS9, we were kind of introduced to this character. We got to know her. As we've talked about here today, she got a lot of character development. And by the end, I think she ended up being a character that you wanted to know more about, but you couldn't find out because the series ended. So she is a character in particular that has been moved forward significantly in the novels. And I did want to get your thoughts on where they took this character in the novels and how you feel about it as an outgrowth of the series itself. Because we see her, she comes on as a counselor, which we talked about. At the end of the show, I mean, she's still in science division, you know, and all at the end of the show. And then it moves on. What do you think about her growth beyond the screen?
I remember reading through the relaunch the first time back in the day, and I liked that they moved her beyond counseling and the command track. I thought that was really interesting, and they were still really continuing to explore the fact that she's trying to figure out who she is. It was really hard, though, for me. I was really pissed, honestly, when they did the whole thing with her and Julian breaking up and then not working. I still don't think that was the right decision.
You and I were not in the first two books that come after the series, Avatar Book 1 and 2, which we have discussed at length on Literary Treks. I know neither of us were thrilled with the writing of the character in those books.
Right. Now it does get better in the rest of the series, but the fact that they break the two characters up, I just never liked. I always thought that they were good together. Even the people that they've become in the novels now, you know, I think that that they would have been good together. But it's just not the way they went, and so that part was really frustrating for me with that. Now, on the other side, her becoming like a captain and all those kind of things, I thought was really, really interesting. And it created a very dynamic and interesting character. Watching her use that lifetime of experience to become a captain, to be able to be somebody, you know, on the front lines with the Destiny series and the Borg, with Picard and Riker. I mean, she's on the front lines with those two guys. She kind of goes toe to toe with Picard, actually, in that series. And you don't feel like it's cheap or cheesy, you know.
So that's the thing. Like, a lot of people listening are thinking, and this was my first reaction too when I, you know, found out what they're going to do with her, that, oh, that doesn't make any sense. Ezri's a captain? That's just like one of those crazy book things that they do. But, you know, without giving spoilers away of what happens, I think if you read the novels and you see how they develop her character, it actually makes a whole lot more sense than it does if you just approach it from what you saw in season 7 of DS9.
Right. And just a spoiler alert here, but you know, the reason she becomes a captain wasn't because they just reached in and made her a captain. She gets a battlefield promotion because her captain gets killed.
Which happens to a lot of characters in this time period of Star Trek.
Right. Yeah. But she then continues to prove herself as a captain, which is very interesting. And the only thing that I think is a little bit frustrating, too, and this is just me personally, is that in some ways she's still kind of struggling with being joined and trying to figure things out a little bit too long, I think. I felt like by the end of the series, to me at least, of Deep Space Nine, it really felt like that they had put to rest who she was going to be. Now, she could grow and whatever, but I didn't feel like there was going to be that much struggle left when I finished the series, you know? Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's the interesting thing about the novels is they can do some really interesting things, and you can be like, at the beginning, and then you become more comfortable with it as time goes on. And for the most part, I've really enjoyed her character. I'm very excited to see it continue. I'm equally excited to know that she will have her own novel, Aventine novel, coming out next year by John Jackson Miller. So I look forward to much more Ezri to come in the future. I'll be very interested to see where they take that character, because there's a lot you can do with her. Because she is a wide open character. There's a lot we don't know about her because we only got one season of her. So, you know, we're really watching her grow up in the novels in the same way that, you know, we watched, say, for 7 seasons and watched Picard come into being, or, you know,
or Sisko, Worf, or especially
a Sisko. Yeah. Yeah. All these characters that we knew for 7 seasons. So we knew a lot about them. She really gets the opportunity, and the authors have been doing a good job for the most part. I've really grown that character, so that's fun.
Well, any final thoughts on Ezri? Is there anything that we didn't cover? Because I know that you love this character. Anything else that you wanted to mention?
You know, Chris, I think that she's just a character that it was hard for a lot of, you know, fans of geek things. We don't take change well, which is really strange because we watch these shows that are all about change. Right. But the moment somebody comes in to change our shows, we get really pissed. Yeah. I mean, just ask a Doctor Who fan about how they like the new Doctor whenever he comes around. They almost always hate him. So I think the same thing happened here in Star Trek. You know, you had Ezri come in and no, but you're kind of set up to not like her because she's not Jantia. But I think the writers did a great job with creating a very interesting, dynamic character who had a lot to add to the series, who was different enough, who taught us enough about her culture in a way that, again, you know, Jantia never would have been able to do. And I think that's the great thing. You know, if you're going to do this kind of thing with a character, make sure that you're telling me a story that couldn't have just been a Jantia story. It needs to be an Ezri story. And I think for the most part, they were able to really do that.
She's not a replacement Dax.
Not at all.
A different Dax.
Exactly. And I think that made it really interesting, and I really liked the character. And I really enjoyed Nicole personally from the beginning. And so all in all, to me, Ezri is a character that deserves to stand among all the other main DS9 characters and to be up there with Pride.
Well, I hope that our discussion here gave everyone some different insight on Ezri, because I do know she's not the most popular character amongst DS9. I know I've come to appreciate Ezri a lot more over the past year or so, Matthew, as you and I have been talking about DS9 together, both here and on the Duray Treks and such. So hopefully everyone listening, if you're not an Ezri fan, maybe, you know, you can go and watch season 7 with some new eyes here. Well, truth be told, Matthew can talk about Ezri all night and all day, but we better close out this show. So besides Ezri talk, here are some other things we've been discussing elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit. Space Seed Commentary.
And in this proposal, it opens up with Kirk and Spock playing chess. And then Spock actually cheats in order to win and gets caught and is a little bit embarrassed.
Earl Grey.
Civilians on TNG.
I'd say that, the Enterprise is lucky to have Mott. He is the heir to the great bullion applesauce fortune.
The Orb.
Raising children on the station.
It has sort of a big city, small town feel. In terms of population and size, it's that small town. But in terms of cultural diversity and the challenges that you face as a parent and the things that your children are exposed to, it has more of that big city feel to it.
The Ready Room.
Remember me.
The computer tells Beverly that there's a flaw in the ship's design as the warp bubble is shrinking. And I'm thinking, damn you, Starfleet engineers, why do you build a ship that's larger than the universe itself?
To the journey!
Season 3 Marathon.
Not that I want to get too detailed here, but I'm wondering if that's all it would take if he mated with a human or if he would just have to use human form. But I just love it when John Delancey's like, I was good, wasn't I? And then she's like, yeah. Warp 5.
Prequel technology.
You almost feel like photon torpedoes should have happened 50 years after Enterprise, and they should have gone through three different kinds that you'd never heard of. And that seems more real to me.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Future Sport.
He's from the streets, but he has left that life behind, and like he has become like a sellout in a sense. He's about the winning at all costs and not the true essence of
Literary Treks.
Editing Star Trek with Margaret Clark.
I try to make sure that the books are true to their series. That if you're reading a TOS book, it feels like, okay, Bob Justman would have bought this story. He couldn't afford the effect, but Bob Justman would have gone into Gene and went, you really should read this. This is good.
Melodic Treks.
The Klingon Theme.
Goldsmith's Klingon theme established an aggressive tribal atmosphere for the warlike characters. Goldsmith made it clear in an interview that he wrote the whole Klingon music with bad guys in mind.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week, and some days we even have two shows, and you'll find them in a wide variety of places, including on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can stream or download from the website. So pick your favorite show and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. Matthew, we had a letter that came in. It seems that our Move Along Home as a TOS episode show is pretty popular. We've gotten some feedback on that. We have a new letter from Brad Alexander in Virginia. We haven't heard from Brad in a while. We heard from him back a couple of months ago. And this time Brad says, hey guys, I thought that your review of Move Along Home was one of the best things about the episode. I didn't mind it as much as some Niners seem to. I think of it as the price of doing business. That's probably what Quark thinks about too, right? The price of doing business.
Yes.
Brad says, I am a long-term Niner, having caught most of the series' first run, and I watch through the series at least once a year. And when you consider the number of stinkers in the other series, TOS, a healthy percentage of Season 3, TNG, was it halfway through Season 1 through the end of Season 2 that they alternated between Wesley Saves the Enterprise, trademark, and random holodeck malfunction threatens the senior staff? I think this one bad episode is reasonable, but viewing it as a TOS episode was a fun exercise.
You know, Chris, I think that it's great that so many people have kind of agreed with us that it would have been a great TOS episode. It is a terrible Deep Space Nine episode, but that really is the problem with when you, as we were kind of talking about in the show, you get to the end of Deep Space Nine and it really is, for all intents and purposes, epic. I mean, it is a fantastic space opera at that point. I mean, you expect Klingons to be singing opera big time, you know, just grand, amazing thing. And so when you compare that with Move Along Home, you're like, oh, this is crap. But I mean, Star Trek's done much worse. Plus, that episode, again, you get to see Sisko sing, so, and Julian sing, and the little rhyme with the girl. So that's funny. They did that. They made them do hopscotch, so.
That's good. All right. Well, Brad, thank you for the feedback on that episode. I'm glad you enjoyed that and everyone else who enjoyed us talking about that as a TOS episode. I had to find some way to make that episode palatable to myself, and so that finally struck me. One other thing real quick. We've had a couple of other people mention this as well. Brad mentions that he uses a Podcatcher application on Linux, and he would like to listen to MP3 versions of the show. Now, we do have MP3 versions available for all of our shows, but currently you download them from the website, you know, one file at a time. We don't have dedicated MP3 feeds at the moment. Because we do enhanced podcasts, the features of our shows aren't supported in the MP3 file format, so they are M4As. And that's what feeds iTunes. However, we are going to be setting up MP3 feeds for all the shows. So all of you listening who prefer to have an MP3 feed, an RSS feed, instead of M4A, especially if you're on Android, Linux, or some other platform where you need to use that, that will be coming soon. So stay tuned. We are working on that. We do hear what you're saying. So hang in there. And again, Brad, thanks for bringing that up. And for the feedback. If you'd like to send us feedback on the show or anything else you want to talk about, you can do that by going to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that will come to both Matthew and me by email. You can send us a voicemail through the website as well, or you can go to our forums at trek.fm/forums to talk to us and other listeners about the show. And then in social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, and you'll also find us on Twitter under username trekfm. Now, Matthew, when you're not staring longingly into a photo album of Esri Dax, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me on Twitter at Mash.
No other response to that, Matthew. That's you're just gonna brush that
not
off.
Sure,
like I didn't say anything.
No, I'm just gonna let that one go. I'm not sure really how I should go with that, but. Yeah, you can find me on MattRushing02 on the Twitter. So if you want to talk some Esri or any other Deep Space Nine characters or just Star Trek or anything else in general, give me that reply. Let me know you're following me, and we'll have a great conversation. We also do, as we talked about, literary treks. We have slowly been going through the Deep Space Nine relaunch, so you can find some of those Avatar 1 and 2 and some of the other books we've done so far in
Abyss well.
Talking about the character of Esri and where she's going. You'll hear a lot of that there. Then I have my own blog, 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. And I just talk about all sorts of different things on there. So if you just kind of wanted to see a different side, feel free to follow me there. Chris, when you're not hanging out with Worf making fun of Julian and O'Brien playing with their toys, where can we find you?
I'm plotting a way to sneak in and play with the toys while they're on duty. That's where I'll be. Now, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere on social media under that same username, as well as on my personal website at cbrianjones.com. And then elsewhere on the network, of course, besides here and Literary Treks with Matthew, you can find me on The Ready Room with hosts from all over the network. We talk about Star Trek news and all 5 live action series over there. We have some special guests from time to time as well. You can find me on Warp 5, where we talk exclusively about Enterprise, and also on my interview show, Matterstream, where I talk to actors and writers and designers and scientists and all sorts of people about topics that are loosely related to Star Trek or inspired by Star Trek. So those are all the places where you'll find me. Also, before we let you go, we'd like to tell you about our sponsor for today's show. Our sponsor makes it possible for us to bring the Orb to you every week, and the sponsor for this week's show is Audible.com. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks online. They have more than 150,000 titles for you to choose from. They have classic books, they have current bestsellers, they have a lot of Star Trek books as well. There's some Deep Space Nine books on there. And as a Trek FM listener, you can choose a free audiobook, any audiobook you want, absolutely free, just for trying Audible. Then if at the end of the month you decide you don't want to stick with Audible and you want to cancel that, you get to keep that audiobook absolutely free. That's yours to keep. So nothing to lose. And by joining Audible, trying out Audible, you'll be helping us bring the show to you every week. The way you do that is just go over to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up for the trial. Choose your audiobook and see what you think about it. But you're going to love it. I've been using Audible for 14 years. I couldn't get by without them. There's something on there for everyone, and I know after you try it, if you love podcasts, you're going to love audiobooks. So give it a try. Again, audibletrial.com/trekfm. And one more thing you can do to help us keep the orb coming to you is to go over to trek.fm/donate and make a contribution to the network. We have 8 original alien illustrations available as buttons or art prints as a thank you for your contributions. And those donations help us pay for the cost of production, storage, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the show to you every week and all the shows on the network. So go over to trek.fm/donate and choose what's right for you. And we really thank you for helping us keep the network going.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.